Hello, everybody. Welcome to Motherhood in Hollywood podcast episode 60. I'm so glad you're here. I'm Heather, the hostess with the mostest. Thank you for taking the time to download my show. If you have not subscribed yet to Motherhood in Hollywood, go ahead and do that. Go ahead and just click subscribe on your podcast app or on your iTunes store there, and make sure you don't miss a single episode of all the shenanigans that we're doing here at Motherhood in Hollywood. Thanks. Appreciate you. Also, before we get started with the show, I want to tell you a little bit more about Up4 Probiotics. Up4 has been manufacturing probiotics and only probiotics since 1979. So you know they've spent a lot of time researching and studying their individual strains as well as their trademarked super strain. What amazing. If you've always been curious about trying probiotics, now's the time to do it. Up 4 is available in your local Target store in the vitamin and supplement area, as well as at motherhoodinhollywood.com. Go right there, click on the Up 4 probiotic image. That will take you right to Up 4, where you can learn a little bit more about their probiotics and what they can do for you. And now let's start the show.
Come on, Mama.
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
I hope you guys really are holding on to your butts, because that is an amazing visual for me to have. And I'm just enjoying thinking about the thousands of people listening to this show, everyone holding their butts. Derailing. I'm actually awake today. I've had some coffee, had a little bit of sugar, went to the farmer's market this morning with the family, which was so much fun. It was so nice, but it's really hot in LA lately. I don't know what's going on. Global warming, perhaps, but it is balls hot out here. And some might even say miserable. It's days like this in LA where I realize why people want to live closer to the beach, because it's easily 10 to 15 degrees cooler at the beach. It's a lot windier, but it's easily a lot cooler. And so I can see now. I can see the appeal of the beach. I hear ya. Let me tell you quickly, you guys, my guest on the show today is Travis McElroy. I've kind of been calling him like a power podcaster in my blog post that I put up. It's because he has 8 podcasts. One of them he does annually, but the other 7 he does regularly and releases them weekly. And it's quite impressive what he's done with the medium of podcasting. For those of you who are not familiar with Travis McElroy, he has a very popular show. It's almost always at the top of iTunes, towards the top of the iTunes charts, called My Brother and Me. And it's about him and his, it's him and his two brothers. He's the middle child, the middle brother. And they just have so much fun answering sort of relationship-y advice and questions that people send them. And I think really we're almost the pioneers in the question answer format of podcasting. So many podcasts have popped up since My Brother and Me took off, where people started asking questions now and engaging their listeners and that sort of thing. So we talk about that. He's also going to be a dad. His wife is pregnant with their first child, and we talk a little bit about that and how that will affect his podcasting, how he went from being a theater person, a theater man, to now he's a podcaster for a living, which is incredible to me, and also really is cool and speaks to what you can do with technology. Like, that was probably something in college, and I'm sure it was. This is not something I ever thought in college that I would do as a podcaster. But I'll tell you, it's so empowering to be able to have your own show. There's something about a microphone. You're sitting behind it. You know, whether 10 people or 10,000 people are listening, it's very empowering. I mean, I just can't think of any other word to use. I think that's also why a lot of moms do it, because sometimes we feel, as we're going through our day-to-day lives, like we are not in control of anything. Our kids don't listen. Husbands sometimes listen. You know, our boss at work is telling us what to do. You know, if you're the boss at work, good for you. But it's just, there's just something very empowering about it. So I like, that's why I do my podcast. I like it a lot. So I'm excited to share with you what Travis has to say. And he also talks about where he thinks the future of podcasting is going, which is really fascinating as well. So definitely make sure you, when you listen to the show, do me a favor, share the show with your friends And I really appreciate it. It helps me spread the word about motherhood in Hollywood. And it makes me feel like you like me. No, share the show if you can. So I want to really quickly, I want to read a couple of emails that I got from some people who are fans of the show. I want to start with Olga Herzhenko. She is a producer from the Ukraine who lives in LA now and is a mom of a 2-year-old. And she took the time to email me and reach out to me, which I really appreciated, talking about my 15 by 15 weight loss challenge that I had earlier this year. If you guys didn't hear about that or read about it, you can go to motherhoodinhollywood.com and read about my journey there to try and get healthier. And I really love what she said here. She says, "Let me tell you that I really like your podcast and please keep doing it. The podcast has such a cool and positive spirit, and listening to it has become like a recharge positive energy habit for me." What a nice thing to say, Olga. I want to give you a hug. That is like such a sweet and validating email for me, because I've said many times on the show before, I feel like I'm sort of speaking into a vacuum sometimes. Like, although there is power behind the microphone, it's so nice to hear from somebody who is listening to the show, who discovered it, however you discover it, whether you're an actor or director, producer, writer, you know, whether you're a parent or not, however you discover the show, it's so nice to hear from people who are enjoying the show and enjoying all the hard work that I'm putting out there. So thank you so much, Olga. I also got an email from or comment from Nicole Reddington, who just said, "Love, love, love this podcast." And that is so nice. Thank you, Nicole. I appreciate it. I'm sure you are an amazing person who will probably win the lottery soon. Yay. If you guys haven't yet found me over on Twitter, please take a minute to do that. We've got a lot of fun things happening over there. Sarah Hawkins, Chris Jackson, Mary Payne Moran is following me over on Twitter, and Kim Hooper and author Jessica Leahy. Thank you guys so much for taking the time to follow me at MIH Podcast. And also go to Instagram and Facebook, search Motherhood in Hollywood. You can find me there. And don't forget to keep up with my blog and all my writings. You guys would be so proud of me. I've been writing like almost every day and putting up fun stuff on the blog. And it ranges from everything silly from, you know, writing about film and TV shows to what's happening in my mommy world with Channing and starting preschool again and all of that stuff. So check it out. Take a minute, go to motherhoodinhollywood.com and subscribe to the blog. Thank you again. Okay, so let's get right to this interview with Travis McElroy. Whether or not you're like a huge fanatic of podcasts, or you're more interested in starting your own business, or if you're an actor who is kind of looking for ways to branch out creatively and some inspiration, this is such a great interview. And I truly believe there's a little bit of something for everybody in what Travis has to say. So here is my interview with Power Podcaster. I like that. I don't know if he'll like that title, but I'm giving it to him anyway. Here is my interview with Power Podcaster, Travis McElroy. When I saw you post that you were moving, I did have that initial reaction of, oh my God, what happened?
Yeah, right.
What's happening to all the podcasts? What's going on?
It's a thing that people
think. Are you getting that a lot?
Yeah, I'm getting it a lot. And not as much. There's something about the listenership that I've built that's very much like, yeah, whatever you want to do, we support you.
Yeah.
And so mostly it's people going, so what are you going to do about this podcast when you go? But like most of my shows I do remotely anyways.
Right.
So like it's not that, like, My Brother, Me, Adventure Zone, like, I've always done those shows.
My Brother, Me started in, when you didn't live in LA, right?
Yeah, it started in Cincinnati, yeah. And Griffin and I lived together while Justin was still in our hometown of Huntington, West Virginia. But even then, Griffin and I weren't in the same room. Mm-hmm. Like, we lived in the same apartment, but we'd go into different rooms to record.
To record.
Because we didn't know we were supposed to be in the same room. and we were just like, everybody records remotely. Because the podcast that they did at that point, They all recorded remotely. So we're like, yeah, if we're in the same room, that'd be weird, right?
Right,
so, like,
right.
We'd be like, all right, let's record. And then we'd go in our separate bedrooms and like.
But I think back then, podcasting was so the Wild West. Like, you didn't know the cool things that you can do with it now. And I think it's slowly starting to catch on. That's why there's so many people all over the country that are having podcasts and they're just crushing it with their podcasts.
I mean, even now when people find out that like we're not in the same room, they're like, oh, how do you do that? And I start to tell them like all the technical. They're like, no, like, how do you talk? Like, how do you have that conversation
same
without
way you
being
went on
the
phone with someone.
Yeah, I mean, right? It's not a thing I would advocate for people like who have been friends for like less than a year. Mm-hmm. Like I do it with my brothers and my dad because like our rapport is such that I don't have to see them. We actually tried a couple times to record with Skype video on. And it threw us off so badly to be able to see
each other.
Yeah, we're trying to, we're seeing each other's faces, and it's weird. And so, but like, I also do trends like these with my friend Brent, mm-hmm. who I have known since we were 18. We were roommates in college, and like we've known each other now for 14 years. So, like, we don't need to be in the same room to have the company. But even then, the first couple of episodes, we had to get way better at, like, not talking over, not interrupting. Because there's so many, like, physical, visual cues that people give in a conversation. Like, oh, I would like to add something
here. Like, where you're like, oh, and that's something in my early episodes I do a lot of. You hear me going, the whole time. And I listen to that now and I just cringe.
Well, because it's...
I still do it.
The thing is, what makes podcasting so... So I grew up doing radio. My dad is a radio DJ, has been my entire life. And like a DJ from back in the day when that meant like a morning show with like bits and characters and sketches and not just like music and 10 seconds of, well, that was the new such and such. And now here's the, like actually doing a show.
Right.
And so like we would come in and do bits with him or commercials or that kind of thing.
Oh, that's fun. And when you were little? Or
yeah. Like from, I remember doing it from like five on.
Oh,
like
I
we
love
do
that.
Family based, you know, commercials of
that's
like,
so
hey, Dad,
radio.
We want to go to such and such. Yeah, it was great. But like the difference between radio and podcast is such that there's something about podcast where you don't want it to be too polished. And I always think about it like you could spend hours cutting out every and and pause and, you know, yeah and hey and oh, wait. But like that's what makes it sound like a conversation for people. So really you just want to cut out like 70% of it. You know, cut out all of it. Leave enough, but not so much that people go, oh, I hate this. Yeah. This is, oh, it's so grating.
I'm so critical of those early episodes, but I didn't know. I mean, I was still so new and learning. Yeah. And I did do that a lot. And I have another problem where I say a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm constantly thinking of what I'm going to say next, like I just did. So now I'm hyper aware of what I'm saying and what I'm speaking.
Here's what you do. You pick a phrase. And you just lean into it because I realize on trends like these, I say, here's the thing constantly because we're talking about like what's trending in the news. And so there's usually some kind of reveal of like, this is what the headline makes it sound like, but here's the thing. And I realized editing the first couple episodes, I said, here's the thing, like 10 times per story. And I was like, all right, that's just my catchphrase. That's what I'm going to go with now.
So mine will be,
Yeah. I mean, really, if you're like, well, here's the thing. Like, if you have to pick a thing and lean into it and just know that, like, I think what people like about podcasting is that they feel like they're in the conversation with you, where so much of the time, like if you listen to NPR, you feel like you're listening to other people have a conversation. If you listen to podcasts, yeah. And if you listen to podcasts, you feel like you're in the room. You just are waiting for your turn to speak a little bit. Like, but so many people will like tweet at me who like, I knew the answer to that question. I was screaming at the radio. Like it's this. And like, they know the jokes and they know the answers and they know the references. And it's very, very, it's a very, very special thing. But like, I guarantee that your early episodes probably sounded way better than ours. we've now done 315 My Brother, My Brother, and
That's
Me.
That's incredible.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
And our first 10, I would say, are unlistenable. And not because they're not interesting, though I think that like we still hadn't figured out like what was fun. Like now we tend to maybe get through like 3 or 4 questions in the whole episode. And then those first like 5 episodes we just flew through and weren't taking our time like being fun and funny and talking,
enjoying each
other.
Yeah,
we were so nervous. But also like I was using a $10 headset microphone combo from Walmart.
Yes.
Griffin was using the microphone from the Rock Band video game. And I think Justin had like a $10 just microphone and like earbuds. And like we sounded like we were talking in tin cans to each other. It sounded terrible.
Oh, yeah. I've heard those podcasts. Some people are still doing that. They're using the headsets and it just doesn't sound good.
Yeah. And what you want whenever you make a podcast for somebody is you want, like, the way that you get to make, like, 315 episodes is you find the easiest way for people to listen to it.
Yeah.
So, like, a little bit of sound problems aren't the worst thing in the world. But if that's the thing that someone goes, oh, yeah, I like it, but that takes it from 100% to like 92%, then that 8% of grading maybe doesn't make them listen to it this week. And if they miss a week, maybe they don't come back the next week. And maybe
that,
now they're off
of it. That puts them on the edge to where they might be like choosing. If they only have an hour that week to spend listening, are they going to choose the one that was uncomfortable to listen to a little bit, or the one that they could listen to easily? You have 8 podcasts. Is that right?
Yes. Is that right?
That's an insane amount of podcasts.
I think that's right. I put out something like 27 episodes a month. Jeez. There's one of those 8 is once a year. So that one, that makes it a little
all
bit
right.
easier.
I was like, oh, well, in that case, 7.
Yeah.
I have one and I'm tired all the time.
Well, you know, it helps that like I love talking a lot.
But do you have to edit all your own shows too? Do you do all the technical stuff? Or?
We share it around. Like Griffin usually does Adventure Zone and My Brother, My Brother and Me. Justin will do My Brother, My Brother and Me sometimes. I do the editing on Schmanners and Trends Like These and Bunker Buddies and Can I Pet Your Dog? And then Tybee and I take turns editing in Tarabang.
When I first saw that you were moving out of LA, one, my first instinct is, what happens to Bunker Buddies? Mm-hmm. I love Andy.
Well, right now we'll have by the end of this week recorded episodes for the next like 2.5 months.
Oh, good.
Like we have reformatted the show now to have it be like us do some segments and then a guest segment that has made one. I think the show so much better. Like it was Andy's idea. She was like, we should do segments. I was like, yeah, we should. So we started doing segments and it made the recording so much easier that we're now able to bank a bunch.
Oh, that's good.
And so I think we're going to keep doing it remotely. We've been practicing it remotely for a while now. And then once my baby comes in November, I'm probably going to go on like a 2-month hiatus and then kind of see how my life shakes out at that point.
November what?
Well, it's supposedly 17th. We'll see.
My birthday is November 15th. That's
mine's
why
November 8th.
What?
Yeah,
November babies.
It's all in there. But so then we'll see how it goes. One way or another, Andy's going to keep making it. So even during that hiatus, she's going to find like guest hosts and everything fill in for me.
I do think you should take a break. You're going to want to take a break.
Yeah. I'm stepping down from doing Can I Pet Your Dog? Because originally I was just going to produce like their first 10 episodes. Mm-hmm. And then they were going to like take over. Mm-hmm. But like I just enjoy doing the show so much and they've enjoyed having me on it so much that like now I've been doing it for over a year. So like that I'm stepping down from the hiatus from Bunker Buddies. All the rest of them though I think are still going to continue.
They're manageable.
Yeah, My Brother, My Brother and Me and Avengers Zone are the easiest ones for me. Because like Griffin edits them. Griffin's also about to have a baby.
Oh wow.
His wife is pregnant. They're 2 weeks behind us. So that's an interesting scenario. But those we'll keep doing. Those are our two like flagship ones. And then Schmanners that I do with my wife is easy because like we'll be in the same house and we can work whatever schedule.
Too.
Yes. I'm trying to think. Trends Like These may be a little tough. We might have to rework our schedule a little bit, but it's Trends Like These where we talk about what's trending in the news and like trending on Facebook and Twitter. And it's the only reason I have to stay caught up on current events and pop culture, because for a long time before we started doing the show, I was completely uninterested
in
politics or whatever. It just stressed me out. And now from doing that show, I've learned so much more that I never want to stop doing it. But we might need to scale back a little bit, maybe go every other week. I don't know. We haven't talked about it yet, but plan to keep doing all of them. And then eventually, hopefully, once the kid gets a little bit older, I'll be able to like expand back out.
Do you know what you're having yet?
It's a girl, supposedly.
Supposedly? What do you mean? You're
well,
not sure.
Like the thing is, I had it, and there's so much parenting stuff that I had in my head of how it was going to be that like I was expecting so much more precision and scientific accuracy that when I go in to find out what the sex is and they just like crouch down and look really closely
they do.
At the
they
scan.
They literally just get right up next to the ultrasound machine and they go, well, we think it's a girl.
Yeah. our OB said like, well, I don't see a weenie. So yeah. And we're like, what?
Also,
you're a doctor.
He said weenie? Oh
yeah.
My God.
You're a doctor.
And he said a weenie.
And so like both, we went to an OB and a perinatologist and the perinatologist was like measuring all the organs and everything. And she was like, I think it's a girl. And we're like, are you sure? And she was like 99%.
Yeah.
Because there's always the thing there's of like, we might just have not have seen the penis. We don't mm-hmm. know. And she's like, and there's like all these other like blood tests and stuff you can do. But like it came down to it and we were like, eh.
You know what, do it. What, because I was actually, I had to go through some of that too. They were like, because they called me advanced maternal age, mm-hmm. which is probably the most depressing thing you can say to a pregnant woman. I don't know how your wife is feeling. How old is your wife? Is she?
She's 30. Yeah.
Okay.
That's correct.
So she's not advanced maternal age.
No, but we did. We had a miscarriage 2 years ago. So like this is our first kid and the first pregnancy after the miscarriage. So like there's been a whole like that's why we're going to the perinatologist and all that stuff, because there's been a whole risk of like, but everything's been going great and everything's been going fine.
And you're almost there.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't feel like it feels like it's taking forever.
It does. And then when it happens and you're literally in the shit, you're like, oh, my God, why was I in such a hurry?
I see. But here's the thing. Right now, I feel like a lot of people have expressed that sentiment to me. Mm-hmm. And me personally, right now, I can't do anything. Like my job now is to like keep my wife happy, mm-hmm. keep her comfortable.
That's right.
Make sure like we're moving and like carrying boxes around and make sure she doesn't do it.
Right.
Because she really wants to help and participate and like, but I'm like, you can't lift like 50 pound boxes, you have to sit down. She's like, no, I'm fine. I'm like, no,
it's hard for someone who wants to. When you're pregnant, you do want to do something like that, especially if you're used to taking care of your own shit.
And she's very like get it done kind of person. Mm-hmm. But and so my job now has just been like keep her comfortable. But once the baby actually comes, I can participate a lot more.
Yeah.
And be like right now, like she's just like universally uncomfortable constantly. And like, for example, we went to Universal and we're like doing all the Harry Potter stuff and she could ride like one quarter of stuff.
Yeah.
And it felt so terrible to not be able to be like, okay, well, I'll take the baby this time and you go. Like,
I
look forward to being able to say like, okay, I will spend a day getting puked on and change your diapers and taking care of the kid and you just have a day. Go hang out.
Yeah.
Which I can't do right now. So right now I can do nothing.
You feel a little helpless?
Very much so. Not just like in the relationship, but also just like in the world. Mm-hmm. Because like, I can't see the kid. There's no problem solving. There's nothing I can do at all. Once the kid's there, I can analyze and like problem solve.
And like, I was going to say, you can problem solve and you can apply some of the things you probably have been reading about parenting and what to do when this happens and whatnot. Then once they're here, you can finally start applying some of that.
That's the hope, man. Like, I love fixing problems. Mm-hmm. Whether emotional or physical or, you know, mechanical, whatever. I love problem solving. And right now, I feel like I'm waiting for class to start and I can't answer any questions and I don't have my textbooks and I can't do anything.
Yeah.
And it's making me feel so worthless and useless and frustrated.
It will be here before you know
it. I can't wait.
It's going to be so awesome. Do you have names picked out?
We do.
But
I'm not sharing
To yourself.
Yes.
Because even though I ask, because I'm always curious, we didn't tell anybody our names because we didn't want the judgment. Because my daughter's name is Channing, and people assume I named her after Channing Tatum, which I totally did because he's hot.
No, fair enough.
But people assume that all the time, which understandably so. But we didn't tell anybody.
It feels like a difference between saying this kid's name is blank versus we're thinking about naming him blank, where there's something about the second one that seems to invite input in a way that I don't want. Once I made a decision, I'm like, nah.
No, because everyone will go, oh, my aunt was named that, or oh, I knew this kid in college that beat me up, or you know, whatever.
No,
with
that
name.
That.
Yeah, so definitely keep that to yourself. I want to talk a little bit about where you went to college,
because
I have to talk about that. You are from West Virginia.
Yes.
But you went to the University of Oklahoma.
I did.
Now, why on earth would you do that?
Well,
please know I'm asking that as an Oklahoma State Cowboy.
I understand.
I bleed orange and black.
Boomer Sooner.
I will tell you.
So the reason was in high school and through college, I was not the most committed to. I'm very smart.
I was not very smart.
I am in fact very smart, but I was very lazy and like I have ADD, and so like I always did really well on tests.
Maybe that explains the 7 podcast.
Oh, very much so. I get so bored so quick. I went from working a job where I was working like an 80-hour week to like doing one podcast. I was like, no. So I added a bunch more shows. But so in high school, like I did well, but I never did my homework. I never like paid attention in class. Mm-hmm. And some of my teachers were very on board with that. And some were like, he has a different line. I don't get this. I hate this. and so then we... took I'm trying to remember. I think it's called the pre-SAT, PSATs, mm-hmm. where, like, it's if you get such and such score, you're kind of entered into the National Merit Scholar kind of pool.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take your ACTs or SATs and whatever score you get on that. If you qualify for the National Merit Scholarship Program, basically it means that all these colleges will start courting you.
Were you ever told you just need to apply yourself?
Well, that's the thing is the same year in second grade, I was diagnosed with ADD and put into the Talented and Gifted program. Mm. So like I was both told like, hey, it's going to be really tough for you, but also you're really smart.
So we're going to put you in the hardest classes possible.
Yeah, very much so. So I was taking all these like accelerated program uh-huh. classes, all these AP classes from like elementary school yeah. on, but also like it was really hard for me to care in class and pay attention. And really the only thing that saved me is my parents were very much like, this is not an excuse. You don't get out of shit because you have ADD. Like, this is just a thing that we're going to come up with, like through medication and behavioral stuff and like just expectations and understanding, like we're just going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And so like they never let me off the hook. And I was never able to say like, well, ADD. Well, like I've seen so many kids and parents happens. Fall into yeah. where the parents are like, I don't know what to do. He's got ADD. And it's like, yeah, but like,
there's things you can do.
Yeah, yeah. There's lots of stuff you can do. Like it's all an expectation, especially when the kid's young, it's mm-hmm. all an expectation game of like, but everything's going to be fine. So like throughout my life, I've just learned ways to like not cope, but like, I exist in the world,
right?
And it doesn't bother me. But so in high school, was not super great. And so then I did well on my PSAT and ACT and SATs. And I was just going to go to Marshall, which is like the big college in my hometown, Marshall University. And like that was fine. They had a great mm-hmm. theater department. And that's what I wanted to do. So I was just going to do that. And then I got a letter in the mail that was like, hey, this is University of Oklahoma, you're a National Merit Scholar, we're going to offer you a full ride and a stipend if you want to come here. And
that's crazy.
At first, I was like, nope, because like, that
it's
seemed,
Oklahoma.
It seemed like work. that it just,
oh, yeah, like
it
there
seemed
was an
like work. And like, as opposed to my hometown college, which was just mm-hmm. like, I'll just be here and I'll still know all the same people and I'll still be a pretty big deal and it'll be fine. And my dad was like, well, let's just go check it out. And I was like, okay, but I don't want to. And he was like, okay, I'm fine. And so like me and my dad and my mom drove like 12 hours to Oklahoma. Wow. And like from the second I got there, I was like, oh, I love this. Like
it's
the campus is beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful campus.
And their theater department is amazing. Mm-hmm. And it's like the second oldest theater department in the country. Mm-hmm. And like, I was instantly in love with the theater department, like everybody there. And so like, hour one, I was like, oh, yes, I want to
I feel
to
like I love your parents.
Yeah.
I mean, just everything you've said so far, I'm like, these sound like good people.
Oh, 100%. And so, like, I went and the first, like, 10 minutes after getting there, I had prepared an audition, everything. I had an audition scheduled, and I auditioned for the department.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was walking around the, like, the scholar, what's it? Scholar program or yeah. whatever. And like got a letter that was like, yeah, you've been accepted the drama. Like an hour later, they're like, yeah, they're in. Like a runner came and found me and was like, yeah, you're in the drama department if you want to. And I was like, great. and so it was like a split where I was like, oh, this is incredibly scary, but seems like the right thing to do. So then like I, you know, packed up my bags and moved 1,000 miles away to a town where I knew literally nobody. I was surrounded by people who like were all from Texas or Oklahoma mm-hmm. or you know they'd all come and like I don't know that there was any. I think there was one other person that was a senior when I was a freshman and she was a ballet major mm-hmm. and so like we kind of saw and she was from Huntington, West Virginia.
Oh,
so
wow.
It was like this weird connection there but like we didn't yeah. know each other
yeah,
really.
Yeah.
And so like I had to kind of really start from scratch as far as like making friends and making connections.
But that's fun though. That's fun to get out of your comfort zone and that's good that you did that.
It was yeah. very developmental for me because like as the middle brother, mm-hmm. like I had a lot of friends that I knew through my older brother and I had a lot of friends that I knew through my younger brother and I had a lot of friends that I knew from doing theater, but like most of the friends I either knew way too well and they would always know me as like 7-year-old Travis
right.
or like I knew them because they were my brother's friends or my and like I had never really established myself outside of like my family group.
Yeah.
And so I spent 4 years of like, no, this is just me. Like
discovering
this is,
about yourself and who you were.
I'm not reflecting anybody else's personality from my family or my hometown. Mm-hmm. Like this is just me interacting with. And even then it wasn't like, oh, I blossomed into a wonderful, like I hung out with some jerks sometimes and I hung out with some wonderful people sometimes.
Yeah.
And I did stupid college stuff and I did really fun, great college stuff.
And you were acting then, right?
Yes.
Are you still acting? Is that something you still have a desire to do?
My senior year, or the summer before my senior year, my mother passed away. And it kind of like shook my whole understanding of like the world.
Sure.
In this way of like, oh, time. Time is a thing that we don't have as much as we think we do.
Right.
And I think that there are many people in college who take way longer to kind of figure out like, oh, time is a factor in our lives.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Most people don't figure it out till they're like 25. And at 21, I kind of
had
they're
like a seventh year senior.
Yeah. And so just before my senior year, I kind of went, oh, I don't want to do this. Because it took me until I was about 28 to figure it out that what I liked was I liked getting up in front of people and entertaining them. I like making people laugh. I like, you know, I like being entertaining. I like that feeling you get at a party when you have a ring of people around you and you're telling a really funny story.
Yeah.
I like that blown up to like a room of 1,000 people.
But not stand-up comedy.
No, because that, I'll tell you why in a second. So then acting seemed like, for people that loved it, it was great. Mm-hmm. But for me, I saw it as like, I'm pretending to be someone else, saying someone else's words, wearing someone else's clothes, in someone else's house, holding someone else's glass. And like, there's so much to think about of like, oh, did I remember to pick up the book from the shelf? Because if I don't pick that up, I can't hand it to him. And then the whole scene's ruined. That was like, there's so much mechanical stuff going on that people who don't do acting,
they don't appreciate. They have no idea,
the number of times I've heard people like, I could get up and say words. It's like, okay, cool.
Well, I mean, like, one glance at like Vine or YouTube for the latest, you know, sensation there will give you an indication that people think they can just get up and be an actor.
Yeah.
Or reality TV.
And what you don't understand is how many different layers of thought you have on stage at any point where you're both thinking about the thing you're supposed to say, but also that you're supposed to take a drink and you need to walk to your left and also like, ow, I just stepped on something and my foot is killing me and I twisted my ankle backstage and I can't let that bother me and I can't walk funny. All these different things. And like, I just found that all so stressful and so hard to keep in my brain that I was like, I don't want to do this. And so, but I spent my entire senior year of college like, I have no idea what I want to do.
Just doing some soul searching.
Yeah. Just like I still got my degree in theater and I was in shows and everything and I was still auditioning for things. But like I was, every conversation I had with people was like, yeah, but I'm not going to do this. And I'm like, my friends were like, even my friends that like we were all kind of snarky with each other, like sat me down and were like, hey, you're good at this. You should not give it up. And I was like, it's not because I don't think I'm good at it. It's because I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And, so then, to answer your question about stand-up comedy before I go on, what it comes down to, this is terrible, but I think that I really respect the amount of work that it takes to be a good stand-up comic, and I've been to too many open mic nights and worked where I was like a tech guy at UCB for a while, and I've seen too many open mic nights.
So you've seen it.
I've seen the people who are like, you just get up and you tell jokes.
You're just funny. I'm the funny guy.
And they don't understand the amount of art and artistry that goes into it, where I'm like, I'm not willing to put in that time.
That time. People ask me all the time why I don't do stand-up. And I do occasionally, like I'll go to an open mic or something. But I really think I should have started 20 years ago in order to be honing and like keeping my stories and like fine-tuning them in the way that really great stand-ups do. Because I, like you, love to go to a party and tell a great story, and that's fun. But translating that on the stage is really difficult for
me. With a room full of strangers that you're having to earn every laugh, as opposed to like your best friends. And they're like, I already know Travis is funny, so I'm ready to laugh.
Right.
Yeah. And so, and it's also just like, what it comes down to is I've been doing, if I wasn't doing podcasting, I'd probably be doing stand up.
Yeah.
But like what it came down to when I moved here was like, so to keep going with the story. Mm-hmm. So then I worked at Best Buy for a couple years and I didn't like that. And my one of my best friends from college, Sarah, started working at the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company. I went and visited her there, fell in love with that theater. So I was like, oh, I want to go work with them. So I moved to Cincinnati. And in moving to Cincinnati, my older brother was like, oh, I want to, let's do a podcast so we have an excuse to talk to each other every week. Because they were doing a podcast with the video game website that they worked at the time called Joystick. So Griffin and I moved to Cincinnati, Justin stayed in Huntington, and we started doing My Brother, Me right around the same time that I got this job with the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company. So then I was like running two different lives of podcasting, and I was the technical director and occasionally acting at the Shakespeare Company. And one I found incredibly fulfilling, and one was fulfilling because I liked carpentry and I liked building and I liked problem solving. But like, what it comes down to is I'm a narcissist at heart, and I love attention and I love acclaim and I love people telling me how great I am. And there are people in this world for whom a job well done is praise enough, and they build a set and they love it and they put a lot of time and effort into it, and they don't need applause and they don't need a stand. And those people, I mean this sincerely, are heroes as far as I'm concerned.
Good for them.
Because like, I did it for 5 years, and by the end of 5 years, I was so frustrated that no one was standing up and applauding my hard work and no one understood how hard it was to build the whole set in 2 weeks and all this stuff, that I was like, I can't. But with podcasting, I would tell a stupid joke and like, people would lose it, and I was like, yep, I'm going that way
and
now.
You get immediate feedback online.
Yep.
You get immediate feedback in the number of downloads you see, the people who are attracted to your comedy and to your shows.
Like, and so once I started doing live shows where like, we'd stand up in front of the audience and like do our podcast and people would laugh. That was the other reason that I knew like I could never do stand up, because I'd have to work to get back to a point that I already was at doing this other thing.
Yeah.
And you know, it also, when I moved out here, I moved out here with the intention of like, I will do My Brother and Me, but I will also be auditioning for things and just seeing how it goes. I don't need to audition for things because I have this other job podcasting, but I'll just try it out. And then like, a month after getting here, I was like, oh, that is also a whole life of work that I can't do. Like, I just feel it. I remember in college, there was this kid our senior year. We were taking a class called Preparations for Professional Work. And it was all about, like, building your resume and headshots.
I remember that class. It was, like, how to type out your resume format. And
how to build your monologue book and, like, what your type is and a voiceover audition. All this stuff. And during one of the classes, the teacher, Tom, like kind of went around the room and he was like, what do you got? Like, what's everyone want to do? Mm-hmm. And like, when it got to me, I was like, I don't know, like casting, or like, I want to do something where I'm a little bit more in control, maybe directing.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I don't want to do acting. And I got to this one kid, and this one kid goes, I don't know, I figure I'll either act or do music or be a model. I don't know. And Tom was like, wait, what? You can't just like, you can't pull yourself in three different, you need to pick one of those. And he was like, well, I figure I'll just start doing them, and whichever one is most successful, I'll keep doing.
That's the one.
And it's like, that's what a kid says when they don't realize, like, oh no, you think acting and modeling and music are fun because you have fun doing them now. You will fail at them because you don't realize, like, oh, I need to like wake up at 5 a.m. to get to this audition before everyone else. And even then I'm going to be 50th in line and hope that they need more than 49 people.
Yeah.
And like, all of this stuff that is the work that goes into it. And if you're trying to do that in 8 different directions, you're going to fail.
Okay, my actor friends know that what he's saying is the truth. You have to focus on one thing and do it really well, and then start expanding your world into other things and other areas of entertainment. So we're going to get back to the interview with Travis in just a minute, but I want to tell you guys a little bit more about UP4 Probiotics and the difference they've made in terms of our own internal health. Channing, when she was younger, had a little bit of stomach issues and digestion issues. We started giving her the kids' cubes, and they have worked wonders on how she uses the restroom and her stomach. She doesn't have any more cramps or pain after she eats. So the kids' cubes have been a truly wonderful asset for us and our family. In addition to the kids' cubes, they also have a women's formula, a formula for adults and senior citizens. So definitely go to motherhoodinhollywood.com, click on the UP4 Probiotics image, and that will take you right to UP4, where you can find out how to create a happier inside.
Yeah. And Tom also said, you know, if you don't know where you're going, any old road will take you there. Mm-hmm. And I thought about that all the time because that was it. That's true. It's like, if you don't know where you're going, like, meander around. Right. But if you're like, I don't know, I'll end up somewhere, like, you're going to go off the path. So right. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And then we started podcasting and I was like, okay, I like this and I seem to be good at it. Mm-hmm. And my audience seems to like me and I really like them. And I'm very happy with this. So that just continued to grow bigger and bigger and bigger. And then it hit a point where I was so happy doing that. And I love the Cincinnati Shakespeare Company, and I will to my dying day, and they do amazing work. But, like, the backstage tech work just wasn't for me.
It's not for you. Yeah.
And I was getting older, and I was starting to feel like every day my body just physically hurt from the amount of work I was doing. Mm-hmm. And I was just getting frustrated with that life. And one day, Teresa was just like, hey, what do you want to do? And I was like, well, you know, I have a bunch of friends that moved to LA. I love the idea of Los Angeles. I've always wanted to try it. We talked about it a dozen times, and she was never okay with the idea of moving to LA. And I was like, I just really feel like it will be a big jump for, like, just networking and my career if I can go there for mm-hmm. a little while.
Yeah.
And she was like, okay.
And what does Teresa do?
So she's an actress as well.
Okay.
And she's also, like, she was a lifeguard for, like, 15 years. She started when she was, like, 15. Lifeguard, swimming instructor, like.
So for her moving out here would be a really good thing too, then help with her acting opportunities and stuff like that. Is she still wanting to act?
Well, so basically our agreement was we would move out here for 2 years. Mm-hmm. And during that 2 years, I would build, you know, kind of my, don't want to say brand, but brand.
You can. That's
I'm building my brand.
Building my brand.
I'm building my brand. My personal brand. Of
it,
like,
feels really oogie to say that, but essentially.
The most oogie, yes.
But essentially, that's what it is. And a smart business person, you know, like, that's what it. That's what it is.
I know. It's just gross.
It feels gross. I totally understand.
But yes, I was building my brand. you know, just like meeting people. And the world of podcasting is interesting. So you can do it from anywhere, mm-hmm. but for some reason, still 90% of them guess, but a 90% I would say is, like, done here, yeah. because it's a bunch of people while they're trying to do other stuff recording Philly their type. Podcast. Sure. And so, like, if you want to guest on other people's podcasts, if you want to meet other people to do podcasting, mm-hmm. LA is
the place
pretty
to be.
Much
There's
where
so
it's
many
at.
Comedians that have podcasts.
Oh yeah,
it's like almost every comedian now is like, I have a podcast.
It's a great platform for yeah. that. And so the deal was we would move out here for 2 years. Mm-hmm. I would shake a bunch of hands and meet some people. And during that time, we'd get pregnant. Mm-hmm. She would get pregnant. And that after 2 years, we would kind of, like, see how we felt and then maybe move somewhere else and try something else for a while. And so when we moved here, the intention was for her to not have to work because the podcasting was doing well enough, mm-hmm. That she didn't have to work. She did for a little while, like, work as, like, a dog walker cat care person, mm-hmm. with, you know, a group that does that. Mm-hmm. And she works, freelance doing some, like, casting agency, like, you know, she yeah. runs the things and everything.
But family was always a priority for you.
Yeah.
Family's always something you've wanted. Is that because yeah. you come from such a big family?
You know, I've wanted to be a dad since I was, like, 18. Mm-hmm. I've very, very much been looking forward to having a kid. And you know, Teresa and I talked about it a ton. And then when we had the miscarriage, it was very much of, like, so the miscarriage came about, like, we got pregnant, like, apparently 2 weeks after we got married. And uh-huh. so it was very soon in yeah. a way that we were not planning that quickly. And so it was suddenly like we had this, like, oh, we're pregnant. Oh, I don't even know if we're ready for it, blah, blah, blah. And then we miscarried and it was like, woof. You know, it was very much like a surprise, very close to each other, like mm-hmm. a month apart of, like, well, we weren't ready for that. Now we're not ready for this. And so after that, it was this, like, well, now we're, like, doubly determined to have a kid. Now right. it's like, now we're going to do this right. And, like, we were so excited to be pregnant that, like, we're going to make this happen. So, like, she comes from a family of, like, three sisters. I come from a family of three brothers.
Oh my
and
God,
family
that's
so is very
cute.
Important
yeah.
to both of us. So it's definitely a huge driver for us. And so, like, that was the deal coming into it. So she's kind of been focusing on, like, getting pregnant, and mm-hmm. I've been focusing on building my stuff to a point where
your brand,
yeah, where we didn't have to either, like, work right. outside of podcasting. So now we do Schmanners together, mm-hmm. And she does, like, the casting agency stuff. But mostly I've been very, very lucky that podcasting has grown into a thing that has been able to support our
yeah.
family in
That's
a fairly
incredible,
comfortable way.
I don't think people ever would think that, A, that's possible. Yes. Or even 10 years ago when podcasting really first kind of came on the scene. I think it's been around a little longer than that. But I don't think people think that it's something you can make a living doing. And I'm always fascinated by people who can and who do. And you're an interesting case because that's what you're choosing to do.
Yes.
Like, it's not like somebody goes to school for podcasting.
Oh, God.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't even know.
It's something that's...
Maybe there's one forward-thinking college professor in the world who teaches a class. But
there should be, and honestly, there could be in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Every day on iTunes, there's thousands of new podcasts that are going up, so...
And, you know, so Brent, who does trends like these with me, just recently chastised me because I kind of was reluctant to call it an art form, where I was like, my art, same as my brand.
Yeah.
And he was like, but it is.
It is.
And, like, the thing is I'm...
Because you know there's good podcasts and there's bad podcasts.
And I've done a lot and I've listened to a lot and I've done the work to figure out which is which and that kind of thing. Okay, so I don't want to take full credit for it because really what it is podcasting is such... It's the Wild West.
It is. Right now. I say that all the time. It's the Wild West.
It's the Wild West.
And anybody can do anything and put it up online or on iTunes, you know, and call it a podcast.
Which is part of the wonderful thing about it.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things about it is like you'll never get notes. You'll never get canceled. You'll never get like...
That's true.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
No producer, executive producer is going to come in and go, hey, we're only going to do one more episode.
We're going to replace you. Like,
we're
going to
replace you with a better host.
But it also means that like there's no clear guide. Like if you try to buy guidebooks on podcasting, they're almost always written by people you've never heard of. And their podcasts were about like money.
And
they were
money doing business
economy
centric.
Podcasts. And it's like... Yeah, how do
finance.
I do a comedy podcast and make money? And so a lot of it comes down to we are very lucky to be on the MaximumFun.org network.
Mm-hmm.
And Maximum Fun, I think, is very forward thinking. Jesse Thorne, who runs it, is very forward thinking because the way that the network is set up, we are supported by donors and by listeners. And a lot of podcast networks make their money through advertising 100% through sponsors. And we make some money. Like, we have sponsors and donors. Oh, we have sponsors and advertisers on My Brother and Me and Adventure Zone and those shows. But we keep it very, very, very limited.
Mm-hmm.
And the most you're ever going to hear on a Maximum Fun show is probably My Brother and Me. And even that's, like, maybe two a week at most. And what it comes down to is once a year we do a fun drive where listeners commit to monthly donations of $5 a month, $10 a month, $20 a month, $35, $50, $100, or $200
a
month. And when they do that, they pick which shows on the network they listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And so 30% of their donations go to cover overhead and Maximum Fun and their expenses. But the other 70% gets split amongst the shows they actually listen to.
Not just all the shows on the network, but the shows they listen
Correct. To. So what it comes down to is a very brilliant way that I think all podcasts should operate, which is too often with sponsors and advertisers, what you run into is your money is based off of number of listeners.
Yeah, and downloads.
Which is not reflective of like commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you do donors, it's you could have
people are literally putting their money where their
ears
are.
And so, you know, there's a show that has 30,000 downloads a week. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they make X amount of money from sponsors based on 1,000
downloads.
Yeah. Whatever. Right. Here's a show with 3,000 listeners that no sponsor might ever be interested in sponsoring. But those 3,000 listeners, 2,000 of them give $5 a month.
Mm-hmm.
OK. They're now making $10,000 a month.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like that kind of investment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really the donors and listeners are making. They're making an investment in a thing they love and supporting. Imagine if like Firefly was able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of like waiting for people to buy ads and worrying about how many people were watching the show Firefly, it was the people who love Firefly. Each of them gave
$10. Yeah.
It wouldn't have gone anywhere.
I love that you said that. That's one of my husband's favorite shows.
Exactly.
That
and that's a great example of like people loved it, but not enough people loved it to make it worthwhile to advertisers, but enough people loved it that could have supported supported it if they spent the money to.
Do you think that that's the direction podcast is moving in?
I think it should be.
And even that, but also with even television programming, because you've got now, like, CBS is launching their All Access program where you can buy online and you can get, like, Star Trek is where they're going to be posting that. TV shows are kind of moving away from the traditional cable format where you just get what they put out there. Now you can select what you want to listen to.
I think what it comes down to is that's what it should be. I think that I've said for years that like pay per show or pay per channel is the method that all these people should be embracing, because what it comes down to is we have more opportunities for entertainment than we've ever had before. Ever.
It's almost overwhelming.
Yeah. And so to expect people to sit down on a Friday night and watch a TV show once a week because that's when it's on is ridiculous to me, because maybe you get that with a big live event. Maybe you get that with like
the
something.
Olympics or something.
Or a show that you don't want to hear spoilers about the next day at work. But most of the time what you're going to see is shows like Stranger Things, where they go up on Netflix, all 8 episodes go up at once, someone sits down and watches 8 45-minute episodes, and they're done.
And they're done.
Because that's what fits into their schedules now, and it's
the
right there.
The binge-watching.
Yeah.
My husband and I were talking about this, too. It seems like there's no more appointment television.
There shouldn't be.
Nobody is setting aside the time every Tuesday night to watch Dallas like I did.
The only reason that should still exist is for, like, camaraderie. Because, like, we just watched The Bachelorette, and, like, I had a group of friends that got together.
Are you a Bachelorette fan?
I am now. My little brother and his wife do a podcast called Rose Buddies, and it's a Bachelorette fan cast, and they're hilarious. They're two of the funniest people in the world. And their show, I started listening when they were talking about The Bachelor, last Bachelor. And so on this one, I was like, okay, I'm actually going to watch it. And I got a group of friends together, and every week the five of us would sit down and watch it on Monday night. And because it was, like, a ritual thing, it held some kind of special feeling to it, but not in a way that if I was by myself, I'd be like, oh, Monday. I'd be like, oh, I'll just watch this tomorrow morning at 8 when it's on Hulu and I can skip commercial. So I think that what it comes down to is the more flexibility people have to enjoy their thing, the more likely that they'll actually enjoy it. So, like, one of the things I've always said about podcasting is, like the number one thing. So people always ask me, like, what do I need to know to start a podcast? And most of it is very, like, boring mechanical advice, like put your podcast up on the same day every week.
Yeah.
So that way people know when to expect it, because there's so many options that, like, if you're supposed to go up every Monday and you don't have one up on a Monday or even skip a week, it leads people to go, oh, well, I usually listen to a podcast now. I'll find a different podcast to listen to now. Yep. And maybe they don't come back to your show next week because they filled the void with something else and they seem to like that better.
Right.
And stuff like, don't throw up an episode going, maybe half my audience won't actually like this bit I did, but who cares? Or don't throw it up with, like, a bunch of sound issues because, like, that's what we're going to do. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff. But, like, the more opportunities, like, talk to them on Twitter, talk to them on Facebook, let them, you know, tell their friends about it, all these different bits of advice. But I think really what it comes down to is you either adapt or you fail. And so much of, like, the old, you know, cable like idea needs to adapt, especially as there's more stuff like Hulu and CISO and Netflix and Amazon Instant, and you have all of these, like, on-demand services, especially, like, CISO is
a
great example.
People can pick and choose now.
And that's why I love CISO so much, and we're doing a TV show with them, but I love them so much because they went, we're just going to do comedy in a way that, like, okay, great. So now
I've heard of CISO. I think I follow them on Instagram or something.
It's a wonderful idea where they said, we're going to do really well-curated comedy. And so, like, even before they had new programming on it, they had, like, every episode of Monty Python, every episode of Saturday Night Live, every episode of Parks and Rec, every episode of 30 Rock, every episode of Mighty Boosh, every episode of Kids in the Hall.
Awesome.
Like, all of these different shows.
Is it online?
Yeah.
Or is it something you can get through your TV?
I think it's available on Roku and maybe like the Fire Stick, but I know it's available online. Uh-huh. And so we're doing a My Brother and Me TV show with them. One, because the people who run it were like, oh, we're big fans of My Brother and Me. And also because like just looking at their lineup, it was like every show that had influenced our sense of humor was like
on their lineup.
Yeah. And we're like, oh, okay, cool. Is so like you get like what's funny.
A documentary style thing with you guys, or is it going to be scripted?
I mean, it's not going to be scripted. It's going to be, very like real life.
Are
we haven't
see
nailed
you
down
recording the podcast maybe
or? No, that will probably be a part of like we haven't nailed down enough specifics. Of the details yet that I don't want to commit to anything, but
tell me everything now.
It'll mostly be I mean I can tell you this, it's going to be us being us.
Yeah.
Like it's not going to be scripted, it's not going to be like us trying to like act and pretend to be versions of ourselves that we're not. It's going to be very like real. We're shooting it in our hometown. And so, like, it's going to be, like, very real us and very real life, like, Huntington. And we wanted to feel like what it would be like to hang out with us. Because, like, my wife always jokes that, like, the podcast, that's what it's like to sit in a room with the three of us.
Yeah.
So, like, that's kind of the feeling we're going for is, like, we want it to feel like you're walking around our hometown with us.
What does it feel like for you? Because we talked about this because I was a guest on Bunker Buddies talking about parent prepping and stuff like that. It was so much fun. I seriously left there going, and what else would I do? My mind was just really like, what else would I prepare? What else can I prep for? And we talked a little bit about sort of the celebrity status that comes along now with podcasting because there are podcast conventions. You're asked to go and speak. You guys go to events, you know, rather individually or together or whatever. How has that changed for you? Because you now have sort of a celebrity like podcaster status.
Yes.
Are people looking up to you like, you know, you're their podcast hero or like, is it weird for you?
Okay.
Cause you're a big deal. I mean, to have the number of shows that you have won, but that are all consistently in the top of the iTunes charts, that one has to bring a lot of pressure, but it also everybody knows who you are.
So this is going to sound like just BS because everybody says
I'm excited.
That. But the thing is like, I'm very lucky that our listener, like fan base, they are wonderful. I know a lot of people who work on the internet full time, doing a bunch of different jobs, ranging from like YouTube to, you know, journalism. And I have seen the way that the internet can treat people.
So mean.
And for whatever reason, there is not a single one of it doesn't seem like there's a single one of those people in the My Brother.
Yeah, you have a lot of fans.
And they're wonderful. Mm-hmm. Like to a point where they're amazing. I literally would not be able to support my family if they weren't as supportive and wonderful as they are. So like when we do a live show and they come to the live show, we just did a live show in Boston. And I would say it was like a 1,200 seat theater and probably at least 600 of them stuck around afterwards to like say hi and take pictures and They are wonderful.
Do you feel pressure then to like be funny or to like,
you know, I don't know? Because one, I would if I was by myself, if like I was another reason not to do stand up. If I was standing up in front of people by myself, I feel like it would be like, oh, you got to carry this.
Yeah,
but
make them laugh.
My wife, before we did our first live show in Chicago, my wife gave me a piece of advice that has basically carried me through. That first live show happened in our first year, so like it's carried me through the rest of the time, which was to not worry about making the audience laugh, to just get up and make Justin and Griffin laugh. Mm-hmm. And like that's the thing I've been doing all my life. Like I'm an expert at making Justin and Griffin laugh. So I worry about that, and I don't worry about the audience. And like I just look at my brothers during the whole show and I make them laugh and we're talking to each other. Because I think if I was trying to make the audience laugh, I would feel pressure and like it probably wouldn't be as good either because I'm trying to.
Yeah.
But if I'm just making Justin and Griffin laugh, the audience is laughing with us. And also, they really want to laugh. They want their no. I don't think that there's anybody who's coming to the shows going impress me.
Yeah.
I think that they're coming like I'm so excited about this and I want to be here with this. And like I sometimes I get nervous. Like I'm very cautious about like what I put out into social media. And I think like I, you know, read through tweets like 8 times before I post them because I don't want to be callous and I don't want to be thoughtless in my actions. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to say a thing.
In terms of like commenting on something that may be happening in pop culture.
Yeah,
or
but also just like
replying back to someone.
There are so many different revolutions going on in the world as there are groups of people who finally feel comfortable saying, hey, I'm actually not okay with this. Mm-hmm. And this hurts me and scares me. And there are people in the world that think that they are being too PC and too sensitive. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be one of those people. I want to be one of the people who trusts the opinion of people that are actually in the group rather right. than me trying to tell them how they're supposed,
how
to,
they're feel, supposed to
feel. And I'm not perfect, and I will often make jokes or say a thing that makes someone go, that's actually not okay. And sometimes I get stupidly defensive about it. But most of the time I try to be like, you know what? You're right. I didn't think that through enough. And like, mm-hmm. I was making a joke, but I didn't think about the words I was using or how that would sound or right. what it would make it seem like I feel. And so I take that very, very seriously that I don't want people to think that I'm not on their side. And one, for selfish reasons, because I want them to keep liking my show. And right. I want them to feel like they can feel comfortable liking the stuff that I do. But also because, like, what fun is it to make jokes at people's expense and drive them away? That's right. It's not cool. Like, and when we started My Brother and Me, you know, we were three heterosexual white dudes from West Virginia, and we didn't come into it with this, like, you know, breadth of knowledge of like what was and wasn't okay to say, and
yeah,
and like we weren't trying to be mean and we weren't trying to like pick on anybody, but we would use words or like slang or terminology that we yeah. had no idea was
the
offensive
power, yeah,
and then like someone would say like, hey, that's, and for whatever reason we were blessed with a really wonderful audience that instead of like coming
turning
out swinging
you.
And yeah. being combative with us would say like, hey, you probably didn't know it, but that's actually not okay. And yeah. we go, oh my God. And so we just started paying way more attention and listening a lot better. And like really trying to be on point and being as inclusive as possible, because I know of, you know, I know that there are shows out there and there are people out there who seem to build an audience and seem to build a product that's mm-hmm. about like just getting the people that agree with them to listen and shunning and mocking all the people that they don't agree with.
Right.
And that seems so sad and angry mm-hmm. to me that I, you know, God bless them if that's what they're doing and that's their living and that's how they want to be, go for it. But like for me, the idea of anyone being out in the world being like, but you know what? That Travis McRae, I hate him because he says like, I couldn't stand that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially because I'm me and I want people to love me, but also because like, to know that I made someone feel that way, like enough that they feel anger when they think about me, that I took that little bit of happiness away from them mm-hmm. to make a joke is not okay. It's harder to get laughs when you're trying to be nice to each other, but yeah. it feels so
well,
much better.
No comedians are known for being the kind comedian.
Yeah.
Because there's really comedy in conflict and the rage and the anger.
You are right. And the problem is really good comedians mm-hmm. can do that non-directionally. John Mulaney. I love John Mulaney. Mm-hmm. Steve Martin. Mitch Hedberg. I like Sinbad. Like there are comedians.
Sinbad.
Well, maybe not Sinbad. Who's but there, there are comedians.
Like, well, that's a throwback. Who's the comedian right now? His name is escaping me. Very popular. He has a TV show about his family and his kids based out of New York. I know you. He's tall, blonde.
Oh, Jim Gaffigan.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, Jim Gaffigan. Like, he doesn't have mean stand-up.
Right. And so there's a difference between, like, saying things mm-hmm. that might be, like, there's a difference between being edgy mm-hmm. and being mean. And, like, Cameron Esposito's, like, my favorite working comedian, like, that exists in the world. Okay. And what I love about her is she makes observations and she will comment on groups of people and she will comment on herself and she will comment on people in the world. And they are funny observations without being mean.
Right.
It's more like you go, oh, that's true, because she's a really good comedian. And then there are people out there who will just say a mean jab to get a laugh like a bully would
right.
because they are not good comedians.
Right.
And I think that if you do that like mean jab, that's A to B. That's not creative. A to C, A to D. Making a joke out of a thing that's not inherently funny, that's great. Now, I will also say that I've seen those, like, you know, the kind of meaner comedians mm-hmm. who are so good at it as to do that and not be offensive. Everybody thinks they're Lenny Bruce because they're edgy and aggressive. But Lenny Bruce was a genius, and not everybody's a genius.
Right, right.
So not everybody can be Lenny Bruce. Right. Not everybody can be George Carlin, because George Carlin was a genius.
Was a genius,
so
yeah.
If you're just, like, imitating George Carlin, you're just like those people at an open mic who thinks all you have to do is get up and tell
insult
jokes.
Insult people.
Because they're not putting the work in to be so good at it that people walk out going, that was really edgy, but, like, nobody here is mad about anything they said because they did it so deftly that, like, they didn't actually offend anyone, but maybe people feel offended, but they don't know why.
Right.
And, like, Paul F. Tompkins is
so
one of my comedy heroes, who I think has a really great way of making wonderful observations in which maybe he makes a joke about someone being stupid, but he doesn't call out a group of people or name anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just... I just feel like it's the difference between really great comedy and mediocre comedy that appeals to a much higher, like, lower common denominator.
Right.
Where everybody's like, I get the joke. And it's like, well, if everybody gets the joke, maybe it's not a great joke.
Right.
You know?
I do love comedy where it's hard to get me to laugh at something, like, out loud at a joke, because I'm a discerning laugher. That doesn't mean I don't think it's funny. I'm just a discerning laugher. But I love the jokes that take a minute to think about. Where it's a kind of rolling joke a little bit. So we're almost out of time, but I want to ask you quickly, how is your podcasting world going to change after you become a dad? Are you going to create a dad podcast in your future? Is there a dad podcast in your future?
I don't know. It's such a good question. Right now, it's shaping up to be that by, like, December, me and my brothers will each have a kid. I feel like my sense of humor has been bad dad jokes for so long now without
a kid. I'm there.
Yeah. Like, my wife and I always talk about, like, what our personal, like, personalities are. And mine has always been, like, you know, like a corny dad. And, like, my friends are, like, young grandparents. And she's like, so we have all these different, like, classifications for us. I don't know that I look forward to a day when my kid is old enough that we can do a show together. I don't know how much I can contribute to the world of, like, hi, let me tell you how to be a good dad. I've been a dad for a month. Like, maybe I'm not the expert.
I think it's that you talk about, because I'm not an expert either. I say that all the time on the show. I talk about parenting stuff, though. I just sort of talk about what's happening in my life, what I'm facing day to day, and, like, combining that with my love of acting and, you know, all of that. I don't even think you have to... I don't think people want experts. They want to hear that you're struggling like they are, which is, you know, it's that connection.
The interesting thing, especially my brother and me, is we've been doing it now for 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you could go back, and we're very us in it. And so you can go back, and, like, when we started, I had just started dating Teresa. We'd been dating for, like, 2 weeks when we started the show. Justin didn't have a kid, but he was married. And Griffin was single and really, like, hating that he was single.
Oh.
And over the course of that 6 years, Griffin met, fell in love with, and married Rachel. I got engaged to and married Teresa. Justin and Sydney had a kid. We've all taken on different jobs and moved to different places. Griffin ended up in Austin. I ended up in Los Angeles. All this stuff has moved and changed. And it's affected, like, the type of questions that we answer.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Your
perspective has changed.
And yeah. since Justin and Sydney had Charlie, we've been doing a lot more, like, parenting questions. Since, like, we got married, we've been doing a lot more, like, marriage advice. Not on purpose, but those questions tend to make it in the list.
Well, it's reflective of your life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, there were questions before, like, when only one of us was married, we were less likely to do marriage questions because we didn't have as much to talk about.
Right.
But now we have more and more to talk about. So I imagine that when there are three kids present, there will be a lot more discussion and relating to that in subtle ways that mm-hmm. I don't think we're going to actively, like, make a push. I right now, especially if I scale down the amount of podcasts, I don't plan to add any new ones anytime soon. Yeah. Maybe talk to me again in like 2 years. but I think that there will be a lot more perspective mm-hmm. that maybe we didn't have before. Especially like, you know, we do schmanners.
You'll be amazed at some of the things all of a sudden that'll pop in that you want to talk about. Well, and like, you're like, I got to tell somebody about this.
Well, and we've already started doing like on schmanners. Like we did an episode about like airplane etiquette. Oh, and like,
yeah.
The idea of like kids and like those little goodie bags and stuff came up and we were like, huh, like I feel very differently about this than I would have before she was pregnant and like mm-hmm. all these different feelings. I am anti those goodie bags, yeah, by the way. I'm already going to be going through enough having a baby on the plane.
I don't need
like,
to make goodie bags.
How
for
about you make a goodie
people.
Bag for me? Cause right. I'm dealing with this all the time exactly. and you're dealing with it for 4 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
Just my opinion.
Yeah.
But that I feel differently than maybe I would have made jokes about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think that there will be definite changes, but not maybe in a like conscious way.
All right. Well, if you ever do a parenting podcast, I want to come on as a guest.
Agreed.
And I want to talk about this moment and be like, remember back then when you said.
I'm sure I will, because that's how all of my podcasts have come into being is I've suddenly had the idea of like, I want to talk about this and make people listen to it. And so maybe
let's
like
start a show.
I guarantee in Interrobang, I do a show called Interrobang with my friend Tybee where we talk about like what's frustrating us mm-hmm. and frustrating us about the world. And I guarantee there is going to be some like parenting
a
conversations
lot of parenting
on that.
Stuff
yeah.
on that. Oh, well, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to watching sort of all the things that change in your world. All good things.
Hopefully.
All good things. And I'm so glad I got to talk to you before you left. I really appreciate
well,
you.
Well, maybe I can come back. I plan on visiting a lot, like once a month. So maybe That's I great. Can come back on the show sometime.
I would love that. You great. Come back on and tell me how it's all turning out.
Sounds great.
And tell everybody quickly where they can find you and all your shows. Not that they probably don't already know, but
most shows are on MaximumFun.org. My Brother and Me, The Adventure Zone. The Adventure Zone, I play Dungeons and Dragons with my brothers and our dad, and we are not very good at it. And Trends Like These, where I talk about what's trending on the internet. Bunker Buddies, where Andy Bolton and I talk about the apocalypse. Can I Pet Your Dog, where we talk about dogs. And Schmanners, where I talk about etiquette with my wife. All of those are on MaximumFun.org. You can also listen to Interrobang with Travis and Tybee. You can find that on iTunes, or you can just Google it. Or you can go to InterrobangCast.com. And then the eighth show I do that's once a year is called Till Death Do Us Blart. And me and my brothers and our friends Tim and Guy, who are from the podcast The Worst Idea of All Time, once a year we watch and review Paul Blart Mall Cop 2. And we are going to do it, and it's every American Thanksgiving.
God, I love it.
And we will do it every American Thanksgiving for the rest of linear time.
As you should.
We've already committed that when one of us dies, we will be replaced by a new host, and the show must continue forever.
Forever.
We have so far done one episode, and we are coming up on our second episode in a couple of months. And it might be, conceptually, my favorite show that we do.
Oh, my God. I love it so much.
And you can find all of that and all of the shows and stuff my brothers do at McElroyShows.com, McElroyShows.com. Everything's there.
Perfect. And also, you guys, I will put everything on motherhoodandhollywood.com too. Some links there. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at MIH Podcast and find Motherhood and Hollywood on Instagram and Facebook. Travis, thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate
thank
you
for having me.
And thanks for being on the show. All right, you guys, have a great week. Remember, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Bye. Mama, funny. Balls.